Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. And we're going to tell you all sides of the controversy. There is no censorship here at Raw Dog Food and Company. Well, there's no censorship on the Raw Dog Food Truth, right, Dr. Jacek?
That's right. We call it like we see it.
And sometimes we get called out. People are like, what? No, kibble's great. We're like, okay, well, you just keep putting that in the body. There was a quote today from Trump's press secretary I saw it on Parler, which I want to call out, a shout out to Parler, but it said, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. And I thought that is
so great.
I thought that was a great, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. So I thought that was great. Hey, if you want no censorship, all right, if you really want to know all sides of the truth, or you want to speak your mind and you don't want to fear censorship, I'd like to give a shit. Oh,
oops.
We'll be editing that out. Oh my goodness. I'd like to give a shout out to Parler, and that is P-A-R-L-E-R. People are leaving Facebook, Twitter in droves, Dr. Jacek, and they're going over to Parler where you can have free speech. And I always had trouble spelling Parler. And if you spell it the wrong way, you're going to get a lot of massage parlors coming up on your. So Parler is P-A-R-L-E-R. P-A-R-L-E-R. It's great. It's free speech, no censorship. It is amazing, amazing, amazing. A lot of people are starting to go over there. I'm going to start going over there as well. And they talk about lots of things. They're going to talk about, you know, it's new. And so it's a great platform if you're tired of being censored. Also, another site that I would love, love, love to call you guys attention to, medicalfreedompack.com, medicalfreedompack, PAC.com. It's a great site, Dr. Jacek. This is where you've got a lot of your vaccine experts, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Dale Bigtree. You've got the Bullingers who did the truth about vaccines. All of these guys are over on this particular site. Lots of free videos about vaccines, and you can get involved. It's called the United Medical Freedom Super PAC. They believe, and I believe, that every American has the constitutional and God-given right to choose what we put in our bodies, however, that is not what is happening. The medical monopoly, they've ushered in an age where that choice is no longer ours to make. That is a quote from the Super PAC, medicalfreedompack.com. So anyway, we always want to give you some information to go out there and take a look for yourself. Those are two great sites, Parler and medicalfreedompack.com.
Cool. I wrote them down so I can stay informed. You know, what's interesting to me about this vaccine issue too, is people like, well, you know, you people that don't want the vaccines are going to keep this virus spreading. It's like, well, if the vaccines are so great and they get them, then what are they worried about? Like, they should be protected, right? They should, if they get the vaccines, how are we a threat to people? You know, the people that don't want to get the vaccines, how are we a threat to the people that do? If these vaccines are so great, they should be fine.
Well, and it's sort of the same way with masks. If you're wearing a mask and the virus can't get in or out because your mask is so great, then what's the worry?
Right.
Dale Bigtree just did one of the best videos I have ever seen on explaining the PCR test, the test that actually tests for COVID, and the cases versus the deaths. And I think if you guys go over to Dale Bigtree, which is called thehighwire.com, it's so amazing. The light will come on. You're like, wow, that makes so much sense. So anyway, I would encourage you guys to take a look at that. Now, speaking of vaccines, guess what? We got an email today from, do you know where, from Europe, the Czech Republic, questions about vaccines for the dogs. So here is his question. And he said his dog had tetanus as a two-year-old youngster. His dog is now six. He's a Bernese Mountain Dog. And he wants to know, does he have natural immunity for it now? Because he's given it, you know. He said that he had been to several vets, and none of the vets over there could tell him if his dog had natural immunity to tetanus. He said, so because I can't get an explanation or an answer, I vaccinate for him for tetanus every other year because we live in a rural area with horses around, and I'm afraid he can catch it again. So that's the first part of the question. And I want to talk about this because we've never talked about tetanus before, but tetanus vaccines or vaccination, they're not recommended to get them often, right?
No, and I've never done tetanus vaccines routinely on dogs. I've seen one case of what I thought was tetanus. This was many years ago, and there wasn't really a definitive way to test for it. It was kind of an exclusion thing. And I remember calling around to like other vets, and I think I called up to CSU, and I was trying to figure out what was going on with this dog because it had these muscle twitches, and it had like the lockjaw. You know, you can hear about lockjaw from tetanus, where the muscles in the jaw just get so tightened up, they like spasm, that the dogs literally can't move their jaws. And it was sort of an exclusionary diagnosis because I couldn't come up with anything else on this dog. And so we treated it, you know, with antibiotics. And you know, tetanus is a form of botulism, actually. But extremely rare in dogs. In my experience, I remember early in my career, I did more horse work. And, you know, we would vaccinate horses, like these young foals, for tetanus because they're down there on the ground, and it was deemed more of a risk in like horses and cattle than it was in dogs and cats. So I would think it would be extremely rare. I'd actually, you know, when I hear cases like this, they're like, okay, that's really pretty unusual. It's where, you know, I always like to see the medical records. Like, how did they come up with this diagnosis? Because sometimes I see things diagnosed where I'm like, I don't know if I completely buy that, you know, diagnosis. Not that this couldn't be true, but I first of all would like to see that verified. And I'm such a minimalist when it comes to vaccines that I would be focusing on building this dog's health up. What are they eating? And not be, so my first thought too is if he's now animately giving this dog a tetanus vaccine, is he giving all kinds of other vaccines and medications and things that are messing up the dog's immune system and making it more predisposed to getting diseases like this? So, you know, I would be focusing more on supporting this dog's immune system than pumping more vaccines into him.
Right. And there's many symptoms of tetanus in dogs. As I was looking this up, it's an inability to blink, constricted pupils, sunken eyes, sensitivity to light. So they say that classically the dog loses the ability to blink, and then they become so sensitive to light and sound that clapping your hands can create spasms or seizures. Yike, dike. But they go on to say, like you said, unfortunately, there is no easy diagnostic test for this. And then the treatment, antibiotics to kill the Clostridia toxin. But they said, you know, it's not a common occurrence in dogs, and it's not something that you want to give them on a regular basis. So some people say, well, how does a dog get tetanus? Well, they say that, okay, you can step on a nail, you know, or rusty nails, but this tetanus lives in places where there's no oxygen, right? So down in the dirt, there's no oxygen, that sort of thing. So they're like, all right, so a dog gets in a fight, you know, with another dog or another animal, and they're rolling around on the ground, and that could potentially get in an open wound, something like that. But they also talk about foxtails. They say that foxtails, you know, dogs run through, and sometimes the foxtails get into the skin and work their way and cause problems. That they can have tetanus from there. But again, me personally, and from what you said too, we're not going to just do an in-case. In case my dog gets tetanus, I'm going to shove these toxins into their body. Because again, we have to have these adjuvants and all these other things that are great for the animal to prevent a possibility. Right?
Yeah, right, right. I mean, I've been practicing a pretty long time, you know, nearly 35 years, and I've seen one case, you know. So does the risk, you know, warrant, like you said, pumping them full of, you know, toxins year after year, or even every other year? You're going to cause much more disruption, you know, to the immune system. It's like, you know, people here in Colorado gets recommended that they need heartworm prevention every month because there could be a mosquito that lives in their house in December or something. I hear this ridiculous stuff that these pharmaceutical companies come up with to justify recommending this. And you just got to think about, well, what's the real risk to the individual dog of something like this? And something like this is so rare, and dogs are out there in the dirt all the time. They got their noses down there sniffing around, they're digging. And so if this was a big risk to dogs, we'd see tons of tetanus cases in dogs. Got to get their faces down there in the dirt all the time, eating stuff and, you know, doing what dogs do, and we don't see it being an issue. So that tells me that there's going to be some individual susceptibility. You know, certain individuals might be more likely to, you know, showing symptoms from this toxin, from the bacteria. But do you vaccinate all the dogs because of, you know, this tiny little risk? It's not unlike our whole coronavirus thing that we're facing. But, you know, you have to look at the risk, and the risk of giving these vaccines over and over again, as opposed to their actual risk of getting the disease.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to censor you because you are giving out misinformation on the corona. Oh my God.
Oh no, I guess I got to go to Parler. I'm done with Dee Dee. I got to go to Parler now.
Okay. So Jarka, I hope we've answered that question for you over in the Czech Republic about tetanus. Now he has another question. He said his dog is vaccinated for rabies by Biocan vaccine. Okay. And he asked if we use this brand in the USA. And because we've done many podcasts on the adjuvants and all the dangers and things that are in vaccines, he took a look at his vaccine and said he couldn't find any toxic substances in Biocan. Now, I don't know if I'm going to have to, I would love to see that. And so I said, can you send me the package insert? Now, unfortunately, he only sent me the picture of the little vaccine bottle. And when I went online to try to read it, it was all in another language, of which I could not read. So I would love to see. I've asked him if he could send us the package insert somewhere in English so that we could read it. Because I have a hard time believing, Dr. Jacek, I would like to believe it, that the Czech Republic has rabies vaccines that don't have toxic substances in them. What say you about that?
Yeah, well, I agree. I find it hard to believe. And you also have to sometimes dig a little bit deeper. I know when I went looking for rabies vaccines that didn't have mercury in them, if you just read the package labels, like, they can have toxic substances up to a certain level. And these are, would be like the preservatives, adjuvants, things like that, up to a certain level without having to report it on the package label. So you need to look up the MSDS sheet, which is the material safety data sheet that pretty much every product is supposed to have one. I mean, cleaning products and everything is supposed to have one of these, and they're supposed to list every single thing that is in that product. But you can find things on the MSDS sheet that is not on the label. And, you know, they can, it's just like in the dog food industry, they aren't always truthful on the labels, or they can hide things, like I said, because of the amount, call them different things. And, you know, maybe this individual, you know, isn't aware of what we would consider some, you know, to be toxic, but there, I'm sure there's some preservatives or something in there that would be an additional chemical exposure for the pet. Plus just the fact that it's a vaccine and vaccines are so disruptive to the immune system, it still would not be healthy for the pet, even if there was minimal toxins. And like I use a mercury-free rabies vaccine, but I still use that vaccine very judiciously and only in healthy animals. And we talk about, you know, risk of exposure and regulations and all of that. I still minimize the use of that as much as possible because any vaccine is going to be disruptive to the immune system.
Yeah. So if you can get that package insert over to us, we would be glad to review it. But again, we kind of doubt that there's not toxic adjuvants.
And you know, if it's in German, Tess speaks German, and my assistant.
Does she really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So maybe she could help.
Why didn't I hire her before you did?
I know, Amanda. I snuck that one in, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. She's awesome. Okay, so we have another email, and she said, I just want to start off by saying how thankful I am to have found you all. I'm so grateful for your podcast, and I only wish I could have learned all of this information sooner for my Stella. I have a 6-year-old female English bulldog, and while it's known they're loaded with issues, I'm so fortunate to have a dog that has challenged my knowledge about dog nutrition and medicine. Thanks to you, Neely, and Dr. Jasek for making it so much easier and entertaining to educate myself. She said Stella had always had seasonal allergies, mostly affecting the skin. And thankfully, we've never been big on rushing her to the vet over every little thing, but she has been put on antibiotics roughly every year, along with standard vaccines. Her recent flare-up this summer, which was hair loss, scaly skin, ear infections, runny eyes, was the worst it's ever been, and we felt we had to take her into the vet for fear of an infection. The vet pushed Apoquil so hard, telling us it's expensive, but it will be life-changing, and they offered no other solutions, no testing, no nutrition discussion, no questions about her environment. It was a one-pill solution that would fix all. They also prescribed her an antibiotic and antifungal, all to be given at once. Yikes!
Wow. Yeah, that's setting that dog up for more and more skin disease. And, you know, I see this over and over in these skin cases. I see so many skin cases, as I'm sure you get lots of inquiries about itchy skin. And you know, skin issues are gut issues, right? And every single time a pet takes a medication of any kind, even heartworm prevention, or, you know, a lot of the flea and tick preventatives now that I don't recommend, especially here in Colorado, are oral. So what do you think you're doing your microbiome when you're throwing a pesticide in there? Like, of course you're killing off the microbiome, as do antibiotics and medications like Apoquil. All of these disrupt the gut. So every time the pet's put on these medications, they may help, but you are further disrupting the gut. So every flare-up is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse until you stop giving the pharmaceuticals, clean up the diet, heal the gut. And the more times you cycle through these medications, the longer it's going to take. And I've learned to be really realistic with people. We're talking easily months. This isn't going to be a quick fix. You want the quick fix, go give the Apoquil, and then you'll be treating cancer in your dog in a few years, because you're not treating anything. It's just, you're just suppressing symptoms, and the disease is going to be manifesting underneath the surface. You're just not going to have to listen to your dog itching in the middle of the night, but they're going to get way sicker in the long run. But every time you do this cycle, it's just going to get worse and worse. You got to sort of suck it up, so to speak, and maybe put up with a little itching. And there's some natural things we can do to help, but we got to allow the immune system to be re-educated, so to speak, to heal the gut. We have to re-educate the immune system on what's friend or foe. So we have to stop vaccinating, get them on a fresh food diet, eliminate toxins going into their body, and allow the body to do a reset, like a reboot for your computer. When your computer is going haywire, what do? You shut everything down and boot it back
up. Go out the window.
Right. That too. Boy, I've been tempted few times with these machines, but with pets, we've talked about this before. What do? We take everything out of the routine that we can, except for the fresh food diet, and we get a new baseline and we see where they're at. And we gotta allow the body some time to do what it knows how to do. And we can do some support, but for the most part, I think the biggest issue is we just keep insulting the body and stressing it with pharmaceuticals, and we're trashing the microbiomes. And every time you do that, you got a longer road ahead of you to get it, to get it straightened out. And this dog is a perfect example. It's had ongoing vaccines and multiple courses of antibiotics. And, bulldogs have some, genetics that, tend to predispose them to skin issues and inflammation in the body. And so, that's going to be a tough one to straighten out. And if you keep giving the meds, it's going to be that much harder when you say, okay, no more meds, and you're going to have a real mess straightening that out. It can still be done, but it's going to be a lot tougher. Every time that pet has antibiotics, you're just making the situation worse and worse and worse.
Well, here were some of the issues that she was facing with her dog: dry eye problems, earwax buildup, and itching. But when you go further into the email, one of the things that she was giving is the Honest Kitchen base mix, which is grain-free. Now, you guys, we've talked about this many, many times. And a lot of people do this, Dr. Tracy, because they say, I'm afraid I'm going to be missing out, or my dog's going to be missing out on some nutritional key points, nutritional things. But in this base mix, there's so much stuff, you guys. You cannot know what your dog is going to be reacting to. It's a dehydrated carrots, a dehydrated peas, dehydrated pumpkin. You've got to add back all these synthetic vitamins and minerals. So I'm always going to say, and people want me to tell them which one of these are the best, and I'm like, I don't sell that, and I don't sell that for a reason. I don't feed that for a reason.
Right. And all of those ingredients they put on there, it creates a really nice looking label, because they can say, oh, look at all these nutrients that we've put in this food. And I think a lot of people are conditioned to seeing that list. Here's how much, vitamin A, vitamin C, yada, yada, all the way on down the list. But that's just on paper. And if you're just giving a bunch of synthetics, you have no idea how bioavailable that is for your pet. And chances are it isn't. And these, whole food nutrition is giving these ingredients in these nutrients in the form nature intended, and they work synergistically. And you never achieve that synergy between these nutrients giving synthetics. It has to be whole food. And so just because you like that label shows all these nutrients, you have no idea. That's all just on paper. And there's, no reason to believe actually that that's even doing the pet any good. And, you know, case in point, I see this all the time, these super inflamed pets that are on these additions to the diet to try to make them quote unquote complete. And the people that do the whole food rotation, like we recommend, without the synthetics and only very targeted supplementation if necessary, those pets do so much better. But it's a very hard, seems to be a very hard leap in mindset for a lot of people.
I think the name, Honest, causes people to say, okay, that's a great name. I believe it. They're honest in their, and they really are honest in what they say. And let me say it like this. They have a section that says, is your food raw? And they say, our recipes are made from dehydrated whole food ingredients, but they are not quite the same as raw. No, they are not the same as raw at all. And it says, our meats, fish, and eggs are gently steamed at about 165 degrees. That's not gently steamed. Before we begin dehydrating, so we make sure they're safe and free of any pathogens. That's the selling point right there.
Mm-hmm. People are afraid. People are afraid of those evil bacteria.
Yeah. Come on, peeps. We don't want to live in a sterile world, or your dog's immune system and your immune system are going to be crap. Crap. They're not going to be strong. Let's be strong. Let's get a strong immune system. So I would say in that respect, they are very honest, saying that, no, this is not a raw product. This is, you know, this is cooked, dehydrated, heated. So we're going to kill everything that's in it. And then we're going to put the synthetic back in.
Right. And so why do they have to add these synthetics? Because they're killing the nutrients by the heating. You know, they're being honest, but doesn't mean it's a good product. You know, you got to see through, you know, the marketing claims. And this whole thing about raw food is full of dangerous bacteria just, you know, simply isn't true. I had this question from a client last week who is newly pregnant. And she said, I don't know, is it safe to feed this raw food? Like, what if the dog comes and licks my baby's face and all this? And like, you know, there's no risk. This is not dangerous food. They're, you know, actually finding pathogenic bacteria in raw food is about as rare as your dog getting tetanus, right? Just not very likely.
Right. Right. So, we have a lot of videos, you know, of our daughter, Amanda, who's a vet, who lots of dogs, cats, horses, right? Lives on a farm. Dogs licking the newborn baby's face constantly. It's a raw fed dog, right? So, baby's still alive. Still doing well.
Amazing.
It is amazing. You know what else is, let me go back to this one point about HPP food. Now, I did tell a customer the other day, Dr. Jasek, who, they got some food, and again, the smells in raw dog food are going to vary. Sometimes you're going to have a tripe that's going to smell more pungent than other times. She was very worried. She said, I don't know. I'm worried about feeding raw. And I said, then I probably would try to push you over to a sterile food. And I said that because I said, that's sort of the position that I want you to be comfortable. I don't want you to go back to kibble. I'd much rather you feed a totally sterile food. Like a fresh pet or any of these HPP. If you see them selling on, we're concerned about pathogens, that's all HPP stuff. Okay. So I said to her, I think maybe you want to go search out that, start feeding a sterile food, because if you are afraid of raw, you will attribute every little thing you see to the raw food. My dog's got some sort of, you know, botulism. He needs a tetanus shot because he's had the raw food. So anyway, I did say that the other day. I said, hey, if you're afraid of raw, go to sterile food. Don't go back to kibble.
I agree. And I try to read people where they're at. I think the most important thing for the health of the pet is to not go back to the kibble. And raw feeding is, you know, always my first choice. But I agree. If I just really, you know, can tell that the raw, in certain cases, the raw is always going to be the culprit, no matter what, you know, goes on because people are afraid, then yeah, go get a more processed food and see how your pet does on that, if that's more comfortable. They're not great, but they are still better than kibble.
So we had another customer who, he said, I've got the most finicky dog ever, right? And he kept trying this one and that and this and that, right? There's something wrong with the food. And to which we said, well, maybe you want to go try something else out. Yesterday he came to the warehouse and he said to me, Didi, I figured out what was going on with the dog. I said, what? He said, we just had to warm it up. And now he's fine. And I said, you know, here's the thing. Sometimes dogs have issues with their teeth and that cold food bothers their teeth. He found that his dog really did just like warmer food. So don't put it in the microwave. I would say either pour hot water on it, mix it in, or I just put some water at the bottom of the pan and I put it on the stove and I slightly stir it and bring it to room temperature. But it was very interesting. So he really didn't have a picky dog. There wasn't anything wrong with the food. The dog just wanted it warm.
Yeah, sometimes if it's really cold, I actually had somebody ask me a similar question. Someone who was, again, worried about the bacteria and about leaving the raw, like, thawed for too long. So, you know, she was actually feeding, like, partially frozen. And the dog was eating it okay, but that's also very hard on digestion. The mm-hmm. digestion, and, you know, we've talked about we need this acid production in the stomach to digest the food. And when you feed something really cold, you actually shut down that enzyme production. Eating a you know, feeding a slightly warmer food, even like you said, just at room temperature, will actually help stimulate those digestive enzymes, and feeding something cold can shut them down. So I think definitely I agree that, you know, they could have some tooth sensitivities, but it could also give them a little bit of a tummy ache if they eat something really cold. It can kind of make the stomach kind of cramp up and they're like, I eat that and I just don't feel good afterwards. You know, the dogs, right. dogs figure that out.
Right, right. Dogs are very smart. As long as we do what you say, get out of their way. Now, something that you have seen lately is behavior changes when we go from a high-carb, high-sugary diet in the dogs, sort of like kids going to grandma's eating lots of cookies. What are you seeing out there when people switch over, get away from all the sugar in these pets?
We know I've seen a few cases lately, you know, dogs with anxiety, and your dogs pick up on people's emotions too. So if you're feeling anxious, your dog's going to, you know, pick up on that. So that's, you know, just a little side note to think about. But I see these dogs, and on the conventional side, even the behaviorist, you know, the first thing they do is put the dogs on more drugs. They put them on Prozac or gabapentin is like the latest thing I saw. Mega doses of gabapentin for behavioral issues. So you're basically just turning the dog into a zombie. But what I have found, so dogs that are on any carbohydrate, and this includes, I mean, kibble for sure. I mean, they got to come off of kibble, but also your Honest Kitchens that even if they're grain-free, a lot of times some of those of the dehydrated and freeze-dried products are very carb heavy because they're cheap fillers. So they can put a lot of potato in or lentils or beans or things like that because it's cheaper than putting in, you know, meat ingredients. And so anytime you have a carb, and it doesn't matter whether it's grain or potato or the legumes, or peas, or everything's got pea protein in these days, the processed foods, pea protein everywhere. All of those things spike the blood sugar. And what happens when the blood sugar goes up and down? Like, you know, you just think about it. If you get up in the morning and you have a donut for breakfast, your blood sugar goes real high and you're, you know, feeling great for a couple hours, and a couple hours later crashes back down. You get a little irritable, you know, the term hangry, where you're like, oh wow, my blood sugar just crashed. Now I need to bring it back up again. What feeding a fresh food meat-based diet does is it stabilizes that blood sugar. So it's not going up and down. They're not experiencing these spikes and they just feel better and they lose this food urgency. Like, and dogs should love to eat, right? Dogs are dog, you know, they should love, always be interested in treats, and you go to feed them, they should always be excited to be eating. But I have people describe this, my dog is just frantic about like getting food. And it's because the blood sugar drops, you know, when they're feeding carbs in the diet, and we get them on a fresh food diet, and the blood sugar stabilizes and they lose that urgency. And, you know, I had a case a couple of weeks ago where the dog was actually on Prozac because it was just so easily triggered and so intense about things like, you know, very reactive to other dogs and to things like squirrels in the yard. I mean, would just go nuts, and like you just could not get the dog's attention away from that. And immediately on switching to a fresh food diet, the dog started to calm down. And a lot of this intensity, just that dogs are always going to want to chase squirrels, right? But this was like an over the top intensity that was a problem in the house. And thus the dog was on Prozac. And within 2 weeks, they had the dog off Prozac, and the dog had calmed down tremendously. So still going to need to be probably some behavioral modification. But when the dog's blood sugar is spiking like that, up and down, they can't focus. They're like, you know, like you're saying, eating like a child that just had, you know, three Cokes and a bunch of candy, you know, like they're just out of control, wired. And they think the same thing happens with the dogs. And so you can't even train them because they can't focus. So once you get that anxiety level down, we get their blood sugar stabilized, they feel better, their guts are healthier, all these things you always talk about, it translates into a calmer, more trainable pet that you don't have to maintain on drugs that turn them into zombies just so you can exist with them.
Well, there's a very sordid history, as Dogs Naturally reports, about gabapentin. And if you guys want to read this article, I would advise you to do it if your dog is on gabapentin. It's called Gabapentin for Dogs, Why This Vet Will Never Prescribe It. Well, I mean, they have huge lawsuits against them in the human side. Right? For gabapentin. Actually, they had a massive $2.3 billion settlement against Pfizer for this particular drug because it had many side effects: dizziness, ataxia, fatigue, tremors, suicidal thoughts. Now, I don't know if dogs have suicidal thoughts, but still, I mean, they had a lot of issues with this drug. So what did they do? They pushed it over into the veterinary side. Mm. And so this vet says, look, I would never recommend this for a dog. And their question is, why is the veterinary community prescribing this drug? Because it causes delirious side effects in humans. It was part of the largest pharmaceutical fraud settlement in history. It has not been shown to be effective in any double-blind placebo-controlled trials, and it may actually prevent the nervous system from repairing itself. So this is very, and it does a lot of things, Dr. Jasek. It blocks a lot of what they talk about in this article, that it blocks a lot of nutritional issues. So it says gabapentin can cause deficiencies in calcium, vitamin D, vitamin B, folate. And ironically, all of these nutrients are needed for nerve repair. Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's really interesting. I had not read that article. I'm going to look it up though, because I've been seeing this trend in this crazy increase in prescribing gabapentin, like every dog for pain. It's prescribed. I'm like, I don't ever see it work. I ask people, is the gabapentin helping? And they're like, you're like, no, not really. And I see, you know, along the lines of what you're saying, it changes behavior adversely. Dogs just act kind of weird and kind of wired, and it changes their personality. It's very disruptive to the nervous system. And there's other pain medications like tramadol. I've used tramadol for years. I actually find it to be really safe and effective, like soft tissue pain medication. If we need to go with a conventional pain medication for whatever reason, I always really like tramadol. And then I now have for the last couple of years, actually, I've had people coming in and saying, oh, well, you know, the vet I was going to said tramadol doesn't work and we need to use gabapentin. And I'm like, that coming from, because I'm not seeing that. But now it's starting to make more sense. And I'm like, there's got to be, you know, when things don't make sense, follow the money, right? Like for some reason, gabapentin is being pushed out. Like, where is this propaganda coming from that tramadol is no good and gabapentin's better? And like, I don't ever see that clinically. And then I'll do the switch back and people are like, yeah, that tramadol, my dog's calm and he can rest and you know, it relieves his pain. And now he's sleeping at night and all this stuff because we're relieving pain and it's not messing with their immune system.
Well, and they say that some of the things that they see with this drug, and I will tell you that I've had people call me and they're on gabapentin. They want to know what's wrong with the food because their dog is lethargic. They're developing vomiting, diarrhea. And you're like, there's nothing in real food that would be causing that. Let's talk about some of the medications that you're on. So they're talking about in this article, what would they recommend instead? Sounds very much like what you would recommend instead, Dr. JC. CBD oil, turmeric, acupuncture, Chinese herbs, Western herbs, homeopathic remedies to address these issues of pain. And they say, like you said, they have not seen that this drug actually helps with pain in dogs. It actually has more of the other side effects that you do not want. You do not want. So yeah, it's really, they couldn't use them in the human market and your dogs can't really talk. So let's shove it over there into the veterinary world, shall we?
Right. Oh, I've seen that before too. Proin, which has phenylpropanolamine in it, which is given to female dogs that get incontinence. You know, some spayed female dogs get a little urinary incontinent as they get older. Well, phenylpropanolamine is in the antihistamine class, and it was pulled off the human market many years ago for stroke risk or something. It used to be put in cold medicines for people and strokes or blood clots, something along those lines. The side effects were severe enough. They pulled it out and just what you said, oh, let's give it to dogs. You know,
this is why we are so animate about no censorship, you guys, because you need to demand a double blind placebo controlled study in your vaccines, your medications, and your dog's medications so they can really be proven to work without threatening side effects and sometimes even death. And the problem is that I think that many of you have never heard that there truly are no placebo studies. There's nothing like that. They don't do placebo studies. They will study them against another vaccine. So if another vaccine that they're studying against or they're testing against, if they have the same side effects, well, it's safe. Oh, well, the side effect was death, so it must be safe. You guys, we are in a world today that wants you to not believe. They just want you to believe things that aren't true. And you can stand there and there's a, you know, a red sign. There's no, it's not red. That is blue. What is the matter with you? How dare you say that sign is red? You know that sign is blue. Dr. Jasek, you're a terrible person. You're just inciting, you know, violence by calling it what it really is. Shame on you.
Right. And the thing is, when things like that are said over and over and over and over again, people start to believe it. That's why you need to have multiple sources of information. Get some information that's not showing up on the mainstream channels, because it truly is getting more and more censored. It's quite scary to me that we are not getting full information. There hasn't been a free press in a long, long time. Mainstream media, they're programmed. It's completely dictated to them what they say, how they present things. So you have to look for alternatives and, you know, trust your gut. You know, I think people have gotten to be so in their heads with all the information coming to them. And I hear this a lot from clients. Like, you know what? just had a feeling like that just didn't seem right. Well, trust those feelings. And if you just feel like you're being told something, you know, about your pet and that just doesn't seem right, well, don't do it and go seek more information. Look up, you know, publications like, you know, like Dogs Naturally or our podcasts or, you know, other places where you might get another side of the story that fits what you're feeling is or is not right for your pet.
And I do think, you guys, you do want to start looking around at places that don't have censorship. At Parler, again, I'm going to say P-A-R-L-E-R. Go take a look at Parler. It's one of the fastest growing non-censorship platforms out there. Because people want to continue to have freedoms. Imagine that, Dr. Jasek. We want to be free here in the United States of what? America. This is the United States of America. We are a free land. Okay? Remember that. We are a free land. And I will tell you what, you are free to go to Dr. Jasek's website.
Yeah, Animal Healing Arts is the practice, and it's ahavet.com.
ahavet.com. Amazing. You want to get in there. You can talk to Dr. Jasek via Zoom. You can do phone consultations. You can go see her if you're here in Colorado. Certainly she can help you in all things pet health. And remember, you want to start your dog on a species appropriate diet. You want to get them on the road to health. You want to get that gut right. Contact us here at Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business. And we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. All right. We'll see you right here next week on the Raw Dog Food Truth. Bye, Dr. Jasek.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.